Father,
Previously, in Aphon Kiss, written and read by Alice Dale, Pippa had to stop Craig angrily playing the 1812 overture at a deafening level. With difficulty, she calmed him down and persuaded him not to cancel his belated 21st birthday party. As usual, she shared the latest developments with David.
On August 29th, Irene proudly delivered her homemade birthday cake on her way to work, while Pippa and Craig toiled all day trying to create a buffet out of their meagre rations. Christine offered to help and proved a tower of strength. She contributed her own butter and cheese rations of 2 ounces each, as well as a tin of Spam. And she was also full of good ideas. "I've brought along a national loaf and I'm going to make banana sandwiches," she boasted. Pippa was astonished. "That's not possible. You can't get bananas for love nor money. Not real ones. I use parsnips. I boil them till they're really soft." And she produced them from her shopping bag like a conjurer. Digging in again, she produced a small bottle, saying, "And add banana essence. Ta-da! It's so long since anybody's tasted a banana, they won't know the difference." The three of them laughed heartily at Christine's subterfuge and continued the catering with renewed vigour, followed by setting the buffet table. "If the table looks really pretty, no one will notice the lack of food," Pippa joked. When 5 o'clock came, Christine excused herself to go home and change for the party. "I saved quite a few clothing coupons and I've managed to buy a new dress for tonight," she announced. "Can't wait to get into it. It's 2 years since I've had anything new. See you at 7:30. Cheerio!" And their good fairy disappeared out the door. "What a nice girl," smiled Pippa. "I can't get over all the work she's put in today. And she's never even met me before. I think she's trying to make up for Daisy. After all, she was the one who introduced her to me, and she must know what's happened." "If so, that makes her even nicer." Happy thoughts returned to the party. "Are you going to wear your uniform tonight?"
"I certainly am not. It got burned too. It was a right mess, so I left it at Buckland. Besides, there's no use pretending I'm still a pilot. No, my pre-war suit will do fine. What about you? Did you manage anything new?"
"Not really." And she hesitated before going on. "I spent so many coupons on a new black dress for your father's funeral that I decided it would do fine." Craig moved towards her and held her by the shoulders. "You'll look gorgeous whatever you wear. This David's a lucky man. I can't wait to meet him." When 7:30 arrived, mother and son, daughter and husband were standing in the sitting room waiting for their guests. Pippa was happy but nervous too, terrified Craig might not like what she had planned for him, or worse, hate David. Craig started pacing the room and making his way towards the window, saying, "Where are they? Don't you dare touch those blackout curtains. You'll have the warden after us. Oh, you know what the buses are like with those wee pinpoint headlights and no overhead street lights to guide them.
They're all taking twice as long to get anywhere. But you may be sure your Auntie Margaret and Uncle Arthur will be the first to arrive. And the last to leave, Craig added. Before the war, they always used to arrive an hour early and drove everyone mad, especially your father. He always thought his big sister behaved like an old maid. He once said, "No wonder they never had any children. I doubt if Margaret ever took off her bloomers in bed." He could be quite a wag, your father. Craig feared for her carefully applied makeup if the tears started, but he needn't have worried. At that moment, the bell rang, and his mother shot out of the room like a startled rabbit, saying, "Oh, God, that'll be them now." Irene and John dutifully followed to offer support, but Craig remained riveted to the spot. He heard the voices in the hall. "Margaret, Arthur, how nice to see you both." "Yes, it's been a while," said the female voice with the distorted vowels of her Kelvinside accent, although they lived at St George's Cross. And Craig thought he detected a slight suggestion of criticism in the tone. "Give me your coat, Arthur." Hanging it on a peg, Philippa said, "Irene, you go into the bedroom and help your Auntie Margaret. And you go on into the sitting room, Arthur. Craig'll pour you a drink. I'm still busy in the kitchen." "Okay," Irene chirped, following her aunt, already halfway up the hall. "Why is everyone saying this okay?" Margaret complained. "It's certainly not in the Oxford Dictionary. What does it mean anyway?" "It just means all right." "Then why not say all right?" she mispronounced as usual. She was wearing the same brown coat and lace-up shoes Irene remembered from childhood. The faux fur collar was looking a bit the worse for wear, but when she removed her coat, her navy blue skirt and pale blue twin set definitely belonged to a more recent decade. Irene suspected she'd had to make the new purchases because she had put on so much weight. She had even attempted some makeup. Unfortunately, her only experience of cosmetics was lipstick, which had suffered from a somewhat shaky hand, giving her the impression of a slightly lopsided, cynical smile. "I love your twin set, Aunt Margaret," Irene said, forcing her gaze away from the bright pink lips and hoping to put her in a better mood. "Lovely colour." "Yes, they call it powder blue," she replied proudly and patted her earrings to draw attention to them. "Oh, a beautiful earrings too," Irene responded dutifully. "Stan gave them to me for a birthday some years ago. He was such a good brother." "Some years ago? He must have been a wee boy," Irene thought. They looked like a top-grade Woolworths. He'd never acknowledged his sister's birthday in Irene's memory. Maybe a card they didn't know about, but certainly not a present. Having been told Pippa's secret about David and that he was coming tonight, she wondered how Margaret would react to anyone appearing to supplant her brother. They had been told in no uncertain terms not to mention the relationship. Her mother had warned, "Remember, he's just a colleague from school." "You're looking really well, Auntie Margaret," Irene said, smiling. "The answer is healthy food, and I've always been complimented on my cooking. And now let's join the others." And with her hand gently on Margaret's back, Irene eased her out the room. Her mother joined them in the hall when she heard Margaret's loud voice commenting on the weather. On sighting Pippa, she said, "That's the dress you wore to Stan's funeral, isn't it? Black is always very smart. And your dress is lovely too, Irene. But I didn't realise we were supposed to dress up, since there's a war on. I'd have worn something more formal if I'd known. Still, it's only the family, so I don't suppose it matters too much.
Pippa and Irene shared eyebrows raised over her head, meaning,
wait till she finds out about the others.
Of course it doesn't matter, Margaret. Now come away in, her sister-in-law said brightly. Margaret didn't move and gave a little embarrassed cough. I hope you don't mind, but I think I have to visit the smallest room in the house before I go in. I shouldn't have had a cup of tea before we left, and then the bus took so long to get here. No need to apologise, Pippa said. You know where it is. Irene giggled as her aunt moved away. The smallest room in the house. Why can't you just say the bathroom, loo or lavatory? I'll bet she talks about doing a number one and a number two. Quiet, she'll hear you. But Pippa too was stifling a laugh. She always tries to be so polite. It's pathetic.
Thank you.